Yeah, so I am going to go right over here and say, my name is Chantel Roberts. I am a speaker, author, consultant, and an occasional expert witness for claims handling standards, practices, and procedures. My goal is to improve the claims handling experience through education, both for the public and for adjusters.
All right, and I'm Bill Auten, and I'm an independent adjuster. I'm the founder of Auten Claims Management, or ACM for short, and we are a firm that investigates liability claims. And I also have a podcast called the Daily Claims Podcast, where we talk about all kinds of fun things as well.
Great. And so, well, I'm trying to get everybody into the room. It's okay. So, we are going to talk about how to read a policy today. And because I know that you had a class on that. And welcome, Tashina. If you or Henry have any questions, comments, or anything like that, feel free to raise your hand. We'll get you up here. And we just ask that you turn your speaker or your microphone on mute until you're asked to talk. So we're going to be talking about how to read an insurance policy. I did put a link up at the top of the page where it will go over some of the things that the Insurance Journal talks about. And Chris Boggs actually wrote this article, which is, if you don't know Chris, he is very, very good. He knows quite a bit of information in regards to insurance, and he is a great thought leader. So, Bill, you had a pot, or I guess a lecture about this.
Yeah, it was a webinar. We did a little webinar on how to read a homeowner's policy. And most of the folks in that group were from the private Facebook group, Adjuster Manuals. And we had a few other stragglers that came in. And it was it was a good little program, I think. I got some pretty good questions and some pretty good feedback. And what we talked about is, if you're going to start out as an adjuster, particularly handling property, it goes for liability too. You really need to know how to read the policy. It's not something that you read cover to cover like it's a book. Most times you're diving into it because you have a specific reason to search for something within that policy. So, reading it with that in mind means that you have to become familiar with the structure of a policy. So, we went through how a policy is put together in terms of the declarations page first. And then all of the policy forms, and that the declarations page kind of acts like a table of contents for the policy. And a lot of people don't realize is when they get a policy, when you first buy a policy, that all the forms come with it. Some carriers will, when they issue a renewal, will send all the forms with it, especially if you get that policy delivered electronically. But most just send the declarations page. And when you first get that first policy, you stick it in a drawer and then you never pull it out again. And the only thing you ever see on renewal is the declarations page. And you forget that all those forms were attached somewhere in the desk drawer. Homeowners generally are not going to be folks that pull that thing out and just read it for fun. They may pull it out if they have a claim with and have a question to answer, but they're likely not going to do that because, like I said, they will have forgotten that it was in that drawer somewhere. So, but they can ask for a certified copy from the carrier later. And that was a topic that we discussed a little bit too. But anyway, the structure of the forms, we went through coverage A, B, and C, and what they really mean and the differences between the main building, the appurtenant structures coverage, which is going to cover detached buildings on the property or even fences, and personal property in terms of contents under coverage C. It's interesting. State Farm apparently, the smart people there decided to combine building and other structures under coverage A. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh my God, can we talk about that? That is so confusing because I just worked a expert witness case for that as well. And welcome, Erica. If you have a question, feel free to raise your hand and get up on stage. But it has completely freaked me out. I don't know how to do that. However, I was going to ask you if you wanted to take a step back after you finish explaining how State Farm and this other insurer, and it wasn't State Farm that I had the case with, but have combined now the structure and the other structure. So basically A and B are now combined as coverages.
And that makes coverage so finishers contents.
Yes. Which and it's so confusing weird. for old school people.
Right. C was always for contents, man.
Yes. Yeah. So I thought maybe if it's okay, we'll take one step back and talk about how you have just every single policy basically has the same parts. And the way that I always explained it to my adjusters is with the acronym DICE, D-I-C-E. D is for the declarations page or definitions, because you'll have both, or I should say DICED. And then you can have declarations. The I is for ensuring agreement. C is for conditions. E is for endorsements and exclusions. And then the other D is for definitions. And regardless of what policy you're looking at, it's going to have those five parts. And so if you're not familiar with a policy and you're listening to what Bill and I are talking about with, you know, your homeowners having like coverage A and coverage B and coverage C, it's just a subsection of that overall policy, because each section will also have their own insuring agreements. And I think Bill will back me up on this, that you have to, just exactly what he said, you have to read the entire policy, and it's not always going to flow like a book. But what you also need to do is look at your insuring agreement, but then you've got to read after that. I was at this really great seminar in Nashville a couple weeks ago, and they said, you know, plaintiff attorneys tend to stop at the insuring agreement, because the insuring agreement will just say, we cover anything that's a covered cause of loss, or we cover you for legal liability, boom. They don't go on to the endorsements and the exclusions or the conditions, which will then define or outline how that insuring agreement will be applied, such as if you don't pay your premiums, we're not going to do anything. Right. That's a condition. Right. You know, if you don't report a theft to the police and file a police report, we're not going to do anything. That's a condition. So anyway.
Yeah. And it's interesting that the DICE acronym that you use, what's interesting is they're not always in that order, but those are essential elements that you need to be aware of and look for them within the pages of the policy. Yes. I covered the declarations first in my talk, and then I went to, I went through the declarations page and really described each component of the deck page. But then I went into definitions, and then perils, and then exclusions. And the perils,
I think that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, the perils part really isn't in the DICE acronym. But that, if you're a property adjuster handling property claims under a homeowner's policy, the perils section is going to be the nuts and bolts of, you know, where the coverage is going to be found. And people may argue that, well, perils, it's, you know, most policies these days are going to be, open peril or, you know, covered unless excluded policy, like an HO3, but that's not really true. There are a lot of HO2s out there. And you have to remember that every renter's policy out there is going to cover the personal property on a named peril basis. So it's something that you should be familiar with and know how to examine those perils and what they actually mean.
Absolutely.
And there may be some renter's policies that are open peril, but I would think that's more rare than a named peril.
Yeah. And something to point out again about the policies, especially the HO policies, is just if you're standardized, and let's again talk about just bringing it down to base level, because I don't know where everybody is in their insurance career or in their insurance knowledge. And welcome Nathan and Doug. If y'all want to join, feel free to raise your hand and join us. But again, taking it down to base level so that we can bring everybody up to understand what we're talking about is with the policies, when we're talking about those policies and you have what's called a standardized policy. And that's usually what we're going to be talking about when we're talking in great big broad terms, like, okay, a homeowner's policy has coverage A and coverage B and coverage C. And then, of course, you have what's called a manuscript policy. And that is what Bill and I were just complaining about when we say State Farm and this other insurer have now combined coverage A and B to be all one thing. And so now, instead of coverage A, B, C, D, there's just coverage A. And then you go to coverage B, which is actually personal property or contents, and it freaks us out as older, more mature, I guess I should say. more senior, is that better? adjusters, you know. And so just FYI, we're talking in very, very broad terms. And you're absolutely right that perils isn't normally listed on there, but I kind of consider that to be part of your, I guess, your conditions or whatever. However, when we're talking about homeowners, HO3, and even your renter's policy or HO4, you need to realize that contents is always going to be actual cash value unless you have an endorsement on there that says that contents or personal property will be replacement cost. And that is something that always trips your lay people, your insureds up. They don't realize that because they think, I've got replacement cost. Well, yes, you do on your house, on your structure.
And I come from a 10-year stint in a part of the industry that wrote a lot of ACV policies. And on those policies, they were all presumed to be actual cash value unless it indicated replacement costs on the declarations page. So you need to understand how these the policy that you're looking at, how they designate whether it is replacement cost or actual cash value, because it may have a replacement cost provision within the form itself, but unless it says it somewhere in the declarations page, that replacement cost provision may not be applicable.
That's a good point. So let's start about how do we read our policies. And you did a great job. You start off, at least I do, and I encouraged all my adjusters to start off by looking at the declarations page. Because as you said, and this is a great example, it is kind of like your index or your table of contents. That's going to tell you what your policies are. I say it's your who, what, when, where of the policy. It lists who the insured is. Sometimes it'll list any additional insureds. It will list all of your forms. That's very important. It'll list your policy limits. It'll list if it's an ACV, actual cash value, an RCV, or replacement cost value policy. It will list which property is insured, how many properties under that policy is insured, because usually for your homeowners, you would only have your one. However, if you're talking about a commercial property, you could have two or three buildings insured under that.
A farm policy will do that also.
Absolutely.
It will list the dwelling and then all of the other barns that might be on the property.
Exactly. So looking at that deck sheet, which is usually the first page, thankfully, is a great way to go. And then depending on what kind of policy it is, you'll either jump into your definitions or you'll jump right into the policy itself.
And the deck page will also provide you with information on the policy term. So you'll know what the effective dates are. And if the date of loss Absolutely. Falls outside of that period, you either need to get the applicable period of the policy, or if it was a new policy, they may not have coverage if the date of loss was prior to the inception of the policy.
Some key things that you need to be paying attention to on the deck sheet, of course, like you said, is the policy period and looking at those policy forms, because that is going to tell you. And what you may not know about policy forms is Bill and I've been, you know, just throwing around a couple of letters and numbers like an HO3, HO4, whatever, a CP0010, CP1030, or whatever. And you go, okay, she's speaking insurance-ese. I have no idea what she's talking about. But what we're naming is the actual policy form. But what you also need in addition to that policy form, and it may or may not be listed on your declarations page. And if it's not, you need to go back to the agent and find out what that policy form is, especially for you adjusters, is the addition date of those policy forms. And I do encourage agents, if you're filling out those deck sheets, if possible, to put the addition dates on there, because there is going to be huge differences between like a CP00107096 versus a 1100. And what that last four digits means is the month and the year that the Insurance Services Office, ISO, printed that base policy, that standardized policy. And because of lawsuits or insurance issues or whatever, every so often these forms will be updated. So to properly adjust the claim, you've got to be using the proper form. And it comes down to sometimes a difference between what is a collapse and what is the collapse. I mean, it comes down to one word.
Yep. And one other thing, you had mentioned the Insurance Services Office. That is just one of several publishers of policy forms. There are also AAIS, URB, MSO, and then you've got a whole gamut of custom forms or manuscript forms, like you had said, that are issued by companies and filed with the insurance department of that state.
What about the SOB?
That's the guy behind the desk.
Exactly. That's the bureaucrat who is trying to. Okay, I'm sorry, but no, you're absolutely right. I know and love the ISO the best. That's the one that I've worked with for 22 years, so I basically have those memorized. But yeah, in fact, today, like I said, I have to be leaving in about 10 minutes, so y'all will carry on without me. But I actually will be talking later on today, and I've deliberately mentioned the AAIS in my talk just because I know other people use it. Going on to the insuring agreement, like we said, that is the thing that says we as the insurer will do X if it's a covered cause of loss. You know, we'll pay for a covered cause of loss. We will pay for your legal liability, you know, da 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 da. Then I do want to point out something that I feel that is really important that a lot of people don't necessarily understand, and I think it's a little bit controversial, is that although there is a definitions section, not all words are defined in the definition section. The definition section will have the words either in quotes or in bold. That's how you know that the word is defined. It has a special definition. If that word is used a lot, you know, like residence premises, if we're talking about the homeowner's policy or something to that effect. However, if a word is only used once, then that the policy will define it right then and there in the body of the policy. So again, that's another reason why it's so important to read that policy front cover to front cover, knowing, of course, that you're going to have to jump back and forth because the exclusions and the endorsements change like the base form. But that sometimes just because a word isn't defined in the definition section doesn't mean that a word doesn't have special meaning, because it could be defined in a policy.
Another thing that I talked about in my webinar is the fact that there is an agreement, the insuring agreement. And by virtue of it being an agreement, the policy is a contract between the insurance company and the policyholder. And it's known as a contract of adhesion. And that just means that when there's an ambiguity in the language, whether it's a funky definition or whether a peril doesn't exactly fit or not fit a certain situation, and it's ambiguous because of the situation, those ambiguities are construed in favor of the party that did not draft that contract. That sounds a little confusing, right? But it means that because the insurance company wrote this agreement and was provided to the policyholder on a take it or leave it basis, those ambiguities are construed in favor of the policyholder, not in favor of the insurance company, because they kind of have the advantage in that they're the ones that wrote this thing and the insured had no say in it. So I like to stress that part about it, the contract too, because you will come across ambiguities in this job.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's frustrating, but that is one of the good things, because again, if you think about it, our job is to cover things. Our job is to pay claims. I mean, that's why the insured has gotten insurance. That's why she has tried to get something covered. And it's not like she necessarily has the buying power to change a particular thing. Now, you can change some policy languages, don't get me wrong, by the endorsements. But even then, I mean, that's very, very rare. And those are even going to be standardized. So you're absolutely right. If there is an endorsement or if there is a confusion, it's a contract of adhesion. And that's something that adjusters live and die by. Again, arguing this, though, just to confuse everybody, you also will say, just because the insured says, oh, that's not the way that I interpreted it, you know, I interpret this word to mean XYZ, doesn't mean that there's an ambiguity. You know, it doesn't mean that we automatically give coverage to the insured just because he didn't understand what, I don't know, some word meant.
Yeah.
You know,
it's difficult to lay out an example of an ambiguity. I should pick one and use one in that webinar. But know that there are going to be times where the policy language doesn't exactly fit the scenario somehow.
Well, I can give you one. I can give you one. And this is on my high horse. And then I'm going to have to split. And then y'all can talk bad about me. And Doug probably knows what I'm talking about because he probably hears me talk about this all the time. And it deals with the word cannabis. Because you know I hate the word cannabis.
Yes.
When it means marijuana. And the standardized definition, insurance definition of the word cannabis is, you know, quote, any THC, any cannabinoid, blah, blah, blah. And my thinking on this is, okay, the problem is that cannabis is the plant. And from cannabis, we get to different species. We get hemp and we get marijuana. Fine. If you want to define cannabis as something that is, quote, any THC, something that has, quote, any amount of THC, end of quote, and something that has, quote, any cannabinoids, end of quote, then you're also including hemp, because hemp federally is defined as something that has 0.3% or less delta 9 THC in dry weight. So hemp federally, the federal definition of it, has THC in it. Where we get the ambiguity is when you have the cannabis exclusion, but the hemp exception. So how can you cover hemp that literally has THC in it by definition, if you are excluding something that has quote, any THC, end quote, that's excluded. So that is an ambiguity. You can't cover something and not cover something at the same time.
Right. Language is so important in these things. And
absolutely.
That's just one example. And there are several more. And you know, as you start to dig into these forms, when you have a coverage situation, you're going to find more and more of them. But you made an interesting point, an important point earlier, that our job is to find coverage, not to find a way not to pay a claim. And
exactly.
I stress that all the time, because we're often accused of doing just that. Oh, you're just looking for ways to deny the claim. Well, that's not true. We have to make sure that the claim is being paid in accordance with the policy conditions or policy provisions, rather. And you know, that's the exercise of going through and examining those exclusions to see if any apply. But in the analysis of those exclusions, you're determining whether or not a fair case can be made that there is no coverage for sure. But overall, your job is to dig in and see if you can find coverage for the policyholder to their benefit.
I'm going to go ahead and split, but I do want to let everybody know that when this is done, I've given Bill full authority to handle this. You're in good hands. But when this is done, the room is being recorded, so you can go to the Art of Adjusting under the blog, and this recording will be released in 2 weeks. If you go under Clubhouse under the Art of Adjusting, you can hear it as soon as I get back up to my hotel room and go from, you know, there, get it all uploaded and all that. It'll probably be tonight. But there you go. Y'all are in good hands. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. And we'll talk later.
Thank you, Chantel. Safe travels.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so those are some really important points she raised about the agreement and the ambiguities. The fact that this document is a legal contract is important as well. And let me see here. I'm going through some of my notes from my webinar and see if there's anything else that we need to cover. Oh, reading this policy, reading and rereading is important. Never assume, even if you think you've memorized like all of the perils or all the exclusions in a policy, be sure you actually read the policy form with the correct edition date, because humans make errors all the time. And you never want to issue a coverage disclaimer without actually using the actual language in the policy that was issued to the insured. If you use the wrong language from the wrong policy form and you make a bad coverage decision, that might be construed as bad faith in some cases. So you don't want to make those kinds of mistakes. I tell everybody that, you know, reading these forms gets easier because as you do it more, you get familiar with where all of these components are. You know where the definitions are, you know where the perils are, you know where the exclusions are, you know where to look for these things. That's what makes it easier. But I always also tell them that assume your first impression about a coverage decision is likely to be wrong, and then reread the thing and double check it. Then when you've double checked it and you're really sure of it, talk with an experienced adjuster or your supervisor before any disclaimers are issued to make sure you got it right. Another good idea is to review case law that pertains to the coverage topic at hand to see how courts are determining coverage in a lot of these confusing cases that you may come across. Does anybody have any questions, or can anybody give me a story about maybe a claim that they had that was confusing or ambiguous somehow? Quiet group today. That's okay. Well, we are going to have the webinar back up. I'm going to produce a recorded version, and that will be available through the Adjuster Manuals website. That's adjustermanuals.com. And of course, I'll announce that soon. And, you know, we usually offer discounts for folks that are in the Adjuster Manuals Facebook group. So if you're on Facebook, go over there and hop in there. And we have some good discussions in there with Chantel. And we also do polls because I want to find out what people want to hear when it comes to the Art of Adjusting. We want to learn what topics are most important to people that are either looking for a career as a claims adjuster, or maybe they are an adjuster now, but they need to broaden their knowledge base. So any input that you can provide there on the Facebook group would be appreciated. All right. Well, I think we've covered a pretty good chunk of how to read a policy here. Of course, this is not in as great a detail that we would go in the webinar. And that webinar that I'm talking about is strictly for the homeowner's policy. And then eventually we will do one that covers the commercial policy as well. And that'll be pretty interesting. So with that, I think if there's no questions, I will go ahead and wrap the room up. And I'll just say that, again, my name is Bill Auten. I'm the owner of Auten Claims Management, and we're an independent adjusting firm. I also have a weekly podcast, the Daily Claims Podcast, and you can check that out on Spotify or wherever you go for your podcasts. And then, as I said, the Adjuster Manuals Group is a great place to go to. So I'd love to see you guys there. And all right, I'll go ahead and close the room. Everybody, have a great day.